You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
What we're doing today, listeners, is our last Star Trek Voyager commentary of all time.
Ooh!
But don't be sad, because what we're doing is Season 7, Episode 19... Author. This is how Netflix describes it. During their now regular communications with Earth and Starfleet, the Doctor sends Earth a holo novel based too closely on his adventures. We all know this episode, and I have yet to meet somebody who doesn't like this episode.
Actually, I think there is one person that we know who does not like it, and that is on Twitter, Enterprise Extra. Recalling correctly, this is not his favorite, and he has his reasons why. He explained them to me one time. I shall not repeat them here. He can explain for himself, but I disagree. I still think it's a very good episode.
Jimothy, right? Come on, Jim.
No, dude. I think I was slightly inebriated. This happened in Vegas. He told me the reasons why he did not like Author, and I'm like, I see where you're coming from, but I still disagree with you. I still think it's a great episode. Yes, it is Measure of a Man, Redux, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot. But that doesn't make it bad.
Jim can have his opinion. He always has a reasoning for everything. That's one of the reasons why I love him, is because he has an opinion about every single episode, and it's a well-thought-out opinion. So, Jim, we love you. And but before we get into this commentary, we promised the listeners, the people listening, that we would talk about our next project, and Char, we're going to do that, and I am so happy to announce this is the debut of what our next show is going to be. That's right, it's going to be a show. It's another podcast.
Yes.
It is called Punch It, Writing in Pop Culture.
That's right. So a lot of the things that we've been doing on To the Journey basically spawned this project. Things like episode rewrites, things like writing episodes on the fly, and simply talking about the nuances of writing. Where did they go wrong? What did they do right? Kind of getting analytical about that. And essentially, though, what we're doing is we're broadening the scope. It's not just going to be Star Trek. It's not just going to be Voyager. There's many shows out there that we both like that we've said over the months, gosh, if only we could just talk about this. I'm so ramped up about this right now. Like, say, Netflix released a new season of a show we both like. And, unfortunately, this show just is not the place for that. However, this new show, Punch It, is going to be home to where we can do that. And therefore, we are going to launch Punch It on your network, The Nerd Party.
That's right. This is going to be one of the latest Nerd Party shows, and it's going to be airing next week. It's going to be airing simultaneously as our last episode of To the Journey, so that you can do a hop, skip, and a jump right over to the new show while staying subscribed to this one, because you should continue to give your love to Trek.fm.
Absolutely.
But with our new show, the reason why we called it Punch It is because we love to punch things up. We love to punch it up. You know, we love to do episode rewrites on the fly. We love to do our own original writings. We love to do reviews where we love to talk about and analyze the writing styles of certain people. And that's not just with TV. We're going to be doing that with film and maybe some text-based writings too, like novels or novellas or things like that. It's all going to be stuff that's kind of in pop culture. We wanted a wide umbrella of writing, the art of writing, and the art of analyzing writing within pop culture, within nerd culture. And we are absolutely excited. You're going to hear a lot of segments on Punch It that you might have heard in To the Journey, but with non-Star Trek items. And so I am absolutely excited for you guys to hear what we have come up with.
Yes, we have a lot of ideas that we're cooking up right now. we're going to save the nuanced details of what the show, what the scope is going to be, and some of the fun things that we're going to do for episode one of Punch It. We won't reveal it all here. I feel like for today, this is enough. And yes, we do have to do our commentary. We're still talking about Voyager. And so we do hope, though, that when we get Punch It released, that you will jump from To the Journey over to Punch It and join us for that as well.
Fantastic. All right. Well, are you ready for this commentary, Char?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do a 3, 2, 1. Okay.
All right.
3, 2, 1, play. I love that the doc says in the beginning. That's the first words that he says because he has such a God complex sometimes.
Well, actually, now that you bring that up, I think one of the reasons why Jim does not like this episode is because the doctor is so incredibly arrogant. And yes, he does have quite an ego. Now, that said, love this robe, this smoking jacket, whatever it is that he's wearing. Look at that thing.
That is pretty awesome, and the pipes on the left and everything like that. This is a...
It's classic.
This was a fun cold open because you knew that this was going to be a good time. Like, just from the word go, just you knew that it was going to be a Doctor episode, and you knew that it was going to be fun and interesting, and it was just pure excitement, yeah.
Yeah, it sets the tone right away. This is going to be fun. It's going to have some elements of comedy. Because it's the Doctor, you know there's going to be some great zingers. And yeah, I'm tantalized. Let's keep watching.
So this is I keep hearing this more and more lately online. And I don't want to give To the Journey all the credit. But I do believe that Voyager is getting a lot more respect online. Because I'm starting to see it more, and, I mean, people specifically are talking about how people are reaffirming what you and I have always known, that Caretaker is one of the best Star Trek pilots, if not the best Star Trek pilot out there.
Well, it's arguable if it's the best, but it's a very good pilot.
Oh, I can argue that it's the best. I will argue that.
Don't get me wrong, I could too. However, I mean, Emissary, that's a TNG episode. Emissary is pretty good, Broken Bow is pretty good. But Voyager is right up there in greatness. It really sets up Voyager's journey so well. So well.
And on top of that, the opening. I'm seeing a lot of love for the opening titles.
Yeah. Oh, it's still good. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always been love, at least for the opening titles. But I'm seeing people freely admit it more.
Yeah. I think maybe what you're saying is that, I think when Voyager was airing, there was a little bit of Voyager fan shame going on because, oh, it's not TNG, therefore it can't be that good. And that's kind of gone by the wayside, I think, at least just a little bit. There's always going to be the haters, and haters going to hate. Yeah. But you know what? Yes, I agree. There has been more open declaration of love for Voyager, and it's very refreshing to see that. I don't know if that comes from just people like us who are celebrating the show, or if simply the passage of time, people are going back and rewatching it and saying, hey, you know what? This is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly couldn't tell you, like what it is, or maybe it's just because maybe I'm not noticing the hate as much because people know that I have a Star Trek Voyager podcast and they're not willing to admit it to me. I don't know.
maybe they know better than to go there. I mean, it's perfectly good to be critical, and I mean, if you have a criticism, we certainly do. The show is not perfect, and no, they did not do everything right, but I think as the show ages, it still has some great value here. It's a very valid installment in the Star Trek universe, absolutely.
So now we are seeing Reginald Barclay on the screen.
Arnold! It's been so long. How have you been, buddy?
Well, I'm doing great, but not as great as this episode. It's, we have the view screen, which is very important in Star Trek.
Yes, yes. And Planet Earth, that's very relevant to Voyager, is it not?
Yeah, the planet on the screen. I out of all the planets, I'd have to say the planet Earth is my favorite planet.
Really? Have you been to other planets, Arnold?
Well, you know, when you're a celebrity like me, and you're as massive as I am, you pretty much have your own gravitational force. So I'm saying I'm a planet upon myself.
Oh, really? Okay, okay. Well, what do we see over here? What's going on? What is Neelix wearing?
Neelix is holding his chef's hat. You know, something that I would never do because I would not be caught dead making Leola root stew. It has very little nutritional value. Neelix is a liar.
So you're just outright calling Neelix a liar. Huh? That's a big claim to make, Arnold. I think you might have to answer to that.
All right, there you have it, folks.
You're done with Arnold. He just left the room. I guess Arnold. He got tired of watching Neelix.
We had some people chime in and say that they wanted a return of Arnold.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was going to cue you several commentaries ago to bring Arnold back because he'd been gone for a very long time. And I'm glad the listeners kind of sparked that because I keep forgetting. But there you have it.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what on earth is happening, there.
It's true. This is a very old tradition.
If you listen to any commentary where Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually a part of that commentary, pretty much all he does is just describe what is happening on the screen. It's one of the worst commentaries you'll ever hear, but the thing is, it's not because it's super entertaining just because he's so ridiculous.
Because it's Arnold. Yeah.
So we started doing that on To the Journey.
Yes. I think you got it started on an episode titled Transylvanian Arnold. So if you all want to go back and look that up, I think that's where it begins. And then Arnold makes sporadic appearances here and there on other commentaries from that point forward.
Like, as you can tell, my accent is not exactly on point with how Arnold actually sounds.
No, but it's still funny. In fact, I dare even say it makes it funnier because it's almost like you're mocking him.
So it's always so weird for me to see Tom in the med bay. I just never got used to Tom being in the med bay.
It's wrong, isn't it?
Like once Kes left, I'm just like, really, is Tom the best that we can do?
Apparently so, and that's really quite disappointing. We know there's at least one other blue shirt out there, Samantha Wildman. Why couldn't they have recruited her?
Well, I mean, she's more science than medicine.
Yeah, well, at least she would probably have more of an aptitude than Flyboy here.
That's true. They could have said the same thing that they said for Tom, where they're just like, "Oh, Sam, you know, thank goodness your minor was in human biology or something like that."
Right?
You know?
Yeah, I mean, she had to have had more science than Tom did. He had 2 semesters of biochemistry, if I recall correctly. That's how he was qualified for the job. Really, out of 150 people, nobody else had more qualification than that. Starfleet Academy has failed science. At least health sciences.
Now, both you and I have mentioned in the past where we would love to write stuff like author. Like we would love to, not author, but like Photons Be Free. You know, like we would like to create our own holodeck programs. And who really hasn't fantasized about doing
that? Oh, yeah. What Star Trek fan hasn't done that?
I can't. Maybe Jim. Maybe Enterprise Extra has.
Oh, come on now. Now you're just insulting Jim. No, I think anybody who's creative enough to appreciate Star Trek has a vivid enough imagination to write their own story. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yes, the Starship Vortex. What? I can't believe we never made an episode on the fly of the Starship Vortex.
Oh, we should have. And you know what? There's always potential to do that on Punch It. We're not going to completely ignore Voyager, I don't think. We're just branching out. We're going to discuss some Star Trek, but it's not going to be everything. So,
yes.
You know, it's possible. And that's one little facet, one alternate universe, if you will, that we just simply have not explored. How did we miss that? That's crazy.
It's true. I mean, like, we're going to talk about tons of different things, but
I mean, it's kind of fun, you know.
And yeah.
Here they are, right back at the very beginning. It's great.
No, this was great, like pseudo fan service, you know, like where it was like that. It was like that time when what was it called? What was that episode called? I'm horrible. It was Projections. Was that the name of the episode?
Well, it depends on which episode you're talking about. I don't have enough info here.
The doc thought that he was a human. Like people were trying to convince him that he was real.
Yes, that's Projections.
Yeah, like I love that callback to Caretaker and Projections, but that was early on. And with this is season 7, so we get like a pseudo callback to Caretaker or to like a basically like an evil Caretaker.
Yeah, basically.
This was a lot of fun. I loved it. This was great.
You're saying the same thing I am. Chakotay with what looks like almost a Bajoran earring and the long hair. Robert Beltran looks good with long hair.
And his oversized tattoo. It's just like everything about this was the exaggerations of people. It was just
big time.
Everything was just a little bit wrong. And I love that about alternate universes, that where things are just a little different. Like when in the episode that we were just talking about with the mirror, like Voyager's own mirror universe episode, where Doc is basically 700 years in the future, and you have what's it called? I can never remember what it's called.
Latent image, right?
No,
I always screw this up. I always think it's latent image, but it's another episode title. Why does this happen during commentaries? It's awful.
I know, because it's not like we can just like go and look it up. I think
we don't edit these.
It starts with an L, like latent image. I think living witness.
Is
what it does.
That's it. Way to go.
Okay, so living witness. Jeez, sorry, folks. So in living witness, they have these people who are trying to reconstruct all the data, and they're getting a lot of things wrong. And one thing in particular is that, like, he says, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, he's, oh, I always thought you were an android. No, I'm a hologram. He's like, well, you know, like, is your home on Mars? No, it's on Earth. You know, like, they got all these little things wrong. And this is, like, an intentional version of that.
Yeah, basically. A lot of parallels.
Yeah, like, Chakotay's not human. He's Bajoran. And you know, Janeway has, you know, black hair, and B'Elanna's not Klingon, and Tom has a mustache.
Yeah, Tom with the porn stash is just not a good idea. And also, I think, stop me if I'm wrong, I think that the wig Janeway wore for Living Witness, same wig that she's wearing in this pseudo-universe as well.
Oh, is it really? I never noticed that.
It's the dark hair. I think so. It looks really similar if it's not exact.
This was such a good story structure for this episode, where instead of seeing one person go through every single interaction within the within Photons Be Free, we see a new person for each scene, each sub storyline. So, like, we saw Tom in the first one, but now we're seeing B'Elanna in the next one. Later on, we're going to see Harry. You know, we're going to see ultimately Janeway, and it was really cool to get those different perspectives.
Yes, it's absolutely the way to go with that. It's so much more interesting, and they're each going through their own different experience. And I love how the mobile emitter is such a burden, because, I mean, you know, it's just this little thing on his arm that it allows him to go anywhere and do about anything. But no, it's this absolutely horrible consequence of his being.
I think that's a souped up version of their rock climbing backpack.
It might be. Good call.
That we saw in Blood Fever. I think so. I might be wrong. But this version of B'Elanna just unnerves me. I don't like it.
Oh, yeah? You don't like a fully human B'Elanna?
No. I don't like a fully human B'Elanna. I don't like her hair like this. Like, when I see...
I was just going to mention the hair. I'm like... the hairstyle, it just does, it's not becoming. And yet, that's probably her real hair. Oh my gosh.
When we see Roxanne Dawson, you know, like, I expect her to be human. We don't see her in her uniform, you know? So, like, your brain has an expectation. Oh, when you see the uniform, you're going to see the forehead. With this one, you have the uniform, bad hair, and no forehead, and it just freaks me out.
You know why? Because I think it breaks that disconnect.
Yes. That is exactly what happens.
Yes, yes. Oh my, porn stash, getting it on.
Now, I wonder what that would be like to see a 3D realistic interpretation of your husband making out with somebody else.
That would have to weird you out, right?
Yeah, like I know that she's smart enough to know that it's not real, but that's got to like get you in the gut a little bit.
I mean, it's still got to mess with you, yeah, mentally. Even though it's not reality, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, that classic gun. She's got all these weapons in her ready room. Yeah, this is Janeway, all right.
Neelix, with the backpack on and the blue uniform, is so alien to me. It's just, it's an image that makes me laugh every single time.
Because you don't buy it?
Yeah, it's just so odd.
Well, it's kind of like when he wore a yellow uniform in Year of Hell. I'm like, uh-uh.
Well, I can almost picture him in a gold uniform, a little bit better than this one. Maybe it's just because of his coloring, but like this is almost as awkward as seeing Picard in his blue uniform in Tapestry.
Oh yeah, yeah, I get it. I honestly do not like Neelix in a Starfleet uniform, and that really goes against the grain of pretty much everybody else. Like with Seven of Nine, when she wears a Starfleet uniform, she looks fantastic. But for Neelix, it doesn't matter what color it is, it doesn't really work for me. Because he's not a Starfleet officer. He's a civilian. And I guess Seven is too, technically, but for some reason it works for her and not for Neelix. I don't know. Speaking of wrong, Harry in a blue uniform.
Yeah, that's a little weird, but not as weird as Harry with slick back hair and trill spots.
Or Tuvok with the goatee. And we've got all three in the turbo lift right here.
No, I kind of like Tuvok with the goatee. I think he rocks the goatee pretty well.
You think so?
I do.
It makes him look so old.
Nah, well, I mean, they added a little gray to it. And yeah. Okay, so here we have Seven of Nine. Not Seven of Nine, but, you know, Jeri Ryan is three of eight. That's
fantasy.
That's
Seven of Nine. She's got red hair, and her Borg implants are more like jewelry.
Yes, it's like earrings and a necklace. It's insane.
Yeah, and it glows and it blinks. It's ornamental rather than necessary. And some weird watch thing.
I'm actually quite surprised that we're not seeing some midriff on her, like in Mirror Universe Uhura.
Well, yeah, and especially, I mean, since the Doctor, we know that he has feelings for her. I'm really surprised that he didn't kind of sex her up a little bit. It's his fantasy.
Well, maybe it's because the Doc respects her too much to do that.
I would love to think that.
Yes.
However, Star Trek doesn't always follow through with messages like that. And so maybe, okay, here's the apologist in me explaining this off. He designed her Borg jumpsuit, remember?
Yes,
so that's true. His handiwork. He's not going to ruin that. There we go.
There you go. Headcanon established.
Okay. I can live with that.
Think about how defeating of an ending this would be. Like you don't go out in a blaze of glory. You know, like you don't go out like with two machine guns or anything like that. You don't achieve any kind of mission. You're just like, nope, your program's decompiled. You know, have fun.
Bye-bye.
Good job. So
that
depressing.
Is disheartening.
It's like the end of Melancholia.
And then zap, that's it.
End of episode. There you go. It's done. We can move on.
Nope.
Oh, there we go.
We're just back from commercial.
I don't like... I know we keep talking about stuff that's happening on screen, and that's bad podcasting, but I never understood. I know it was to save money, but I really wanted him to have an actual setting because it's just a desk with a smoking jacket, and then the bare walls of the holodeck. I would have loved to have seen him in some sort of, you know, like lounge or office or like den or something like that.
A study of some sort, yes.
That was the word I was groping for, a study, yes, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure the logistics of constructing a set they're going to use one time toward the end of the show, imagine that that's the real reason why that didn't work out, but that would have really added some atmosphere for sure.
Yeah,
those bare holodeck walls don't do much.
I do like that the crew is pissed. Like they they confront him about it. They said like, this is not cool. Like this is not okay. And it's it's to the point where like I know it's just a show, and I know it's the producers wanting to have this happen, but. They're trying to make a point, but there's no way in hell the Doctor would be like, oh, what are you talking about? This is totally different.
Right. Yeah. There's a little too much truth in the fiction. And yet, like, I guess it blurs the line enough to where everybody's mad because what do you think is an exaggeration, Doc, and what isn't?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, to be honest, we were talking about how we would all love to write our own little story like this. What if we showed it to our friends and they thought that we got them all wrong? This is actually quite dangerous.
Oh, that's
is that what
true.
You think of me?
That would be even worse. Yeah.
Yeah, because then your friends would probably hate you and never talk to you again.
So true. You're absolutely right.
So actually, let's hold off on the holodeck technology for a little while.
we wouldn't have to write something using our friends and family. We could write something completely original.
Yeah. Ideally, we leave them out of it. Let's just go with that.
Now, I do like that this is a callback to when he found out what happened to the other Mark Ones.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what stirred him to do it. And this is great because it's not just him writing because he's bored. It's he had inspiration. He had a cause that he wanted to draw attention to. That's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw that whole thing earlier in the season. So, you know, if you're watching the show chronologically, that's still fresh in your mind. And this is just building up off of that. And hey, continuity on Voyager, guys. It happens. It's good.
So Kim is listening to his parents, and it's so great because we get to see the parents for the first time, except in like one time we saw the mom in a flashback, I think. But I love Kim's parents. I love everything about them, everything that's been said about them. You know, like she's such a great mom because she is everybody's mom.
Yes, she really is. She's that sweet mom everybody wants, if in fact that is mm-hmm. not their mom. Let's put it that way.
But it's like slightly embarrassing. You know, you're just
yes.
like, mom.
Yes, like, yes, yes. Yeah, like, why haven't they promoted you?
Yeah. I do not like that Seven's there to eavesdrop. That seems very rude.
It kind of is. She's there to maintain the comm link, right? So I guess maybe it's a necessary evil, but if she doesn't have to be there, like, come on, give some privacy.
Couldn't she be in another room, or like, why couldn't she? I mean, it's a freaking starship. Like, they could route the signal to his quarters or something so he could have some privacy.
Yeah, you'd think so, right? She doesn't have to be in stellar cartography to manage a stellar cartography station.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking that. Like, I think, like, leave her in stellar cartography, but send the signal someplace else. Like, Kim's...
Oh, like your quarters or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, although your quarters doesn't have that nice big screen.
That's true. Yeah, I want to see my mom 16 feet tall.
Yeah. Larger than life. That's how you want to see them after 7 years, right? Something like that. What I love about Author, let's get to the heart of the matter, is that, yes, this is kind of analogous to Measure of a Man, where Data had to fight for his rights as an android. This is kind of like the next step. Holograms. Are they sentient? Are they not sentient? Do they have mm-hmm. rights? This puts that all into play, all into question. And it makes a lot of sense that this is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Starship Voyeur, even better than Vortex.
Starship Voyeur. Melrose Space.
Now, this was this version, like Tommy's version, is by far my favorite version because Robert Picardo does such a great job of hamming it up in every single scene.
Oh, and he has the horrible fake hair right in this scene. It's just
the
disgusting.
Comb over.
Yes, it's awful.
Like, payback. Can you imagine being Robert Picardo, like, on set where the writers go, okay, so we're gonna give you a comb over? I think he would be all about it. I think he would think that's so funny. Now, this is
triplets. Oh,
this is such
grief.
A classic doctor's joke where yeah. they say, like, oh, well, then don't do it, you know?
Yeah. I love how he's just, you know, this is bad podcasting, but he's just waving it around, not even taking the readings. Ah, la, 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 la. And he's going to give her a Klingon aphrodisiac.
Now, okay, that is, okay, this right here, like, we've gone into, like, some weird territory here. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is actually where I would be offended as an individual, where I'd be like, you used my image to drug another person and take advantage of them sexually. I freaking hate you. Like, I will slap you silly.
Yeah, it's not right. It is unethical on several levels already at this point.
But I know that Tommy was trying to make a point, you know.
Yes, that's the whole intent. Like, how do you like it, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And yes, for entertainment purposes, it's absolutely wonderful.
I would have liked to have gotten one more Tom Paris holodeck creation before the show got over.
Oh, heck yeah. Absolutely. Because he was so into it. He created Sandrines. We had Captain Proton. And I guess they stuck with Captain Proton for quite a while. We saw it here and there. But I would think that he would stop.
Yeah. I'd want to see like one more intricate storyline where, you know, like he was really into... oh man, what was it? What was it called? It was, I'm so horrible with the names. It was the one where it was Seska's program, like when Seska reprogrammed Tuvok, worst case scenario.
Yeah, the worst case scenario thing. I don't remember the name of the holo program.
Insurrection 1 Alpha, Insurrection Alpha, or something like that?
Something like that. I'm not entirely sure. Oh, and there was also Fairhaven. He created that.
I wanted another Fairhaven. I wanted him to actually achieve Insurrection Alpha or something like that. And also, just for the, so the listeners know, my first choice for our last commentary,
dude, this was gonna come up,
was Fairhaven. So if any of you are sad that you have been robbed of a Fairhaven commentary, you have nobody but Charlene Schmidt to blame. I'm just putting that out there.
How dare you, sir? How dare you? I didn't reject the idea. You threw out Fairhaven. Almost jokingly, you were like, ha ha ha, Fairhaven. And then you put down author, and I said, that's a good one. And we went with it. I didn't reject Fairhaven. We might have even done it. But you know what? This is a better episode anyway, sir.
I'm still going to blame you.
Fine. I really don't care.
Okay, I like Cooking with Neelix. Like, it's a holo cookbook proposal. That's such a good idea. Like, having someone... Like, yeah, having an interactive chef to teach you how to cook and what to cook and how to do it. Oh my God, I would totally do Cooking with Neelix. I would have that holodeck program.
I would love to have a holodeck program like that, minus the Leola route.
Yeah.
But I would love to learn like how to really cook and know the expert tricks of the trade. That would be amazing. Absolutely. That would be extraordinarily educational. Now, for the record, though, there is a cookbook that's like Cooking with Neelix, and you can get it on Amazon. Yeah. I think it's out of print, but you can still find it here and there, and it's recipes inspired by the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand why I never got that. I should own that. That is absolutely something I should own.
Well, and you know what? Cooking with Neelix, I think, would be a lot more entertaining than A Briefing with Neelix. You know, that news program he did on season 2. I'd like to think that he eventually got bored with doing that show and then started Cooking with Neelix, which is great because then all those episodes he did would be very handy for Crewman Chell, who took over for Neelix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that would be good. Like, I was glad that we got that his show at least once more in Star Trek. Like, it was a passing reference with Sam, like Samantha said, like it was on in Samantha's quarters, and she's like, oh yeah, she's a loyal watcher or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was Macrocosm, if I'm recalling correctly.
I would have liked to have seen more original content from the Voyager crew, because you're not getting any new stuff. Like, you're not getting any new TV shows or movies or holodeck programs or anything like that. And so, you know, like, you would have people doing podcasts where it's like, okay, welcome to the Voyager podcast. Today's meal is going to be Leola root, like onion stew. That's the twist. So tune in, everybody. You know, just stuff like that.
Your breath will be twice as bad.
Yeah, there'd be more of that stuff, I think.
Yeah, sort of like when you're in school and, you know, they do the announcements every morning.
Yes.
You know, what's for lunch? What's going on? Who won some awards? I would think that on Voyager that would be, kind of entertaining, good to know. And then also, like, they maybe have some material that they've bartered with from other cultures. But as far as their own stuff, they got to make their own.
It would be kind of like in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. They still did the, now hear this, now hear this. You know, like
exactly.
Something like that. I think that would have been an interesting, like, because we didn't hear it in TNG or Deep Space Nine or anything like that. But I feel like in Voyager, that could be a fun thing to experiment with because they're on their own. They get to do their own thing. And so they're like, maybe that would be a good idea to do a now hear this instead of just an email blast.
Right, exactly. A lot more entertaining, conducive for entertainment value for us as the viewers. But also, I would have loved to have seen them play around with that sort of stuff a lot more. I mean, we had Talent Night one time. We have no idea if it continued. So they should have played with that a whole lot more in terms of, like, what are they doing for their brand of fun? What sort of things do they develop? We got some of it. I would have loved a whole lot more. Absolutely.
Now, I like that we got the same actor to play B'Elanna's dad. I thought that was very nice.
Yes, that's nice.
I mean, that's always a good thing when that happens, but...
Yes, and I love the fact that they actually do speak with one another. We actually get to see that because we know there's such tension there. I mean, just about every B'Elanna episode mentions her mommy or daddy issues, so now we actually get to see it in action.
And I love that bit at the end where you realize that there is a little bit of hope for their relationship. She goes, I'll write you. You know, that's just, and the way she said it, the tone of her voice, it got you right on the heartstrings right there.
Right in the feels. Yeah, absolutely. One thing I absolutely love is the look of 24th century Starfleet headquarters in San Francisco. I loved that building we just saw a moment ago, the communications building. That's a cool look.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Whenever we get a sneak peek of Earth in the 24th century, I'm all about it.
It's always nice. We don't get nearly enough of it. That's for sure.
This was interesting that they took it from the angle of damage done, where it did leak out. It wasn't just so much a battle with the Hollow Novel owners or anything like that, who run the publishers. It wasn't just a battle to maintain the rights. It was already, like, it's already out there. It's already making the rounds. It's already, you know, like, it's people are already playing it and already criticizing Starfleet. Because just imagine, like, I know that you try to say that Starfleet's not the military, but it kind of is. You know, like, just imagine if some medic over in, you know, like, who's over stationed overseas wrote a novel and released it, and it portrayed, you know, like, his general in a negative light. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that would make the news. Like, people would be talking about that.
Totally. And as a bystander, if you're not there with him, you don't know if what he's writing is the truth or a total exaggeration.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing that might have, I don't know, they might have been trying to pull a little bit from life in 2001 when this aired was, this doesn't happen so much anymore, I don't think. But back then, I remember things leaking on the internet was a huge problem. And it was sort of like when it was first happening too, like, oh, they've never had to deal with things leaking so quickly and so, like, to so many people in the masses. If something got out, it kind of was like damage control because you could spoil the whole plot of, say, this big movie you were going to have coming out, and then it's not going to be entertaining if you know what happens. And
yeah,
so I wonder if they're kind of pulling for that a little bit, just a little bit here.
Could be.
Because I remember they were trying so hard in that day to control the internet, and we all know that that does not work.
I love that Janeway is initially pissed. You know, she's angry that he created this. But the moment that someone tries to go after him or say that he's not a person or say that he has no rights, she immediately gets into Mama Bear mode. And she's like, no, I'm allowed to yell at him. You're not allowed to yell at him.
That's right. It's sort of like somebody, you know, you make fun of your family members all the time, but if somebody else does it who's not in your family, it is not okay.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
I can't believe he gets compared to Toby the Tark. It's such a low blow.
Is that the step below Flotter? You know,
I'd
in terms
so.
Of
yeah, yeah.
characterizations? Yeah. Yeah. Toby the Targ.
That'd be funny if like they should have made like a Flotter reference where it's just like, this guy is no better than Flotter, and he's like, you watch your pink mouth.
That would have been great. Like, how dare you insult Flotter? That was my childhood you're talking about. It's good to know that publishing lives on in the 24th century, I guess.
Yeah, I'd be fascinated by how that works. I would love any kind of, in anything 24th century, whether it's government or how publishing works or how recreation works or how transport works. Yeah, anything. I gobble it up. I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah. In fact, I almost want to put out a criticism that says this is a little too much like how it works in our day. Like, I think it would change a little bit because it's a very imperfect thing. You think they would have worked some things out over a couple of centuries? I don't know. But maybe not.
Who says that they didn't? You know, like, this is a brand new problem.
Well, this is a brand new problem, yes. Yes. Which is why we're fighting it out right now.
Oh, this, what did you think of this judge character? He's very judge-esque.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say, he's very judgy. You know who they should have gotten? Judge Judy. I love her. Come on.
Gonna ex-nay that idea real quick.
No!
Don't holographically pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. So 11 minutes at a time. That is insane.
That is.
There's no way you'd be able to get anything done 11 minutes at a time.
That would be extraordinarily difficult. Yeah. Like, just in time to get everybody settled and have 10 minutes, probably, of real actual time. And that's presuming there's no interference, because we're seeing it's shaky at best.
Yeah. Like, we have one of my directors telecommutes. He lives in Nashville. And every single time we have a meeting, there's at least 5 minutes of him trying to figure out his webcam or us trying to figure out the cables or the connection's not working. And that's just from Chicago to Nashville. This is to the freaking Delta Quadrant.
Right. Yeah, for real. And like, even for us, when we're podcasting, sometimes our connection is not always stable.
Yeah.
You don't know that all the time from the magic of editing, thank goodness, but it happens almost every time.
I do like in this segment that they show his weaknesses. They show how, you know, like that if he can be reprogrammed, it's because he wants to be reprogrammed and he's trying to become better than himself. And like in Janeway's example is like, yeah, he totally disobeyed orders. And they're like, yeah, well, what? I mean, why would you talk about that? That's not exemplary. He's like, yeah, but it's human.
Yes. Yeah, they're humanizing him. That's what they're trying to do.
Very well done. I think it was very well written and it got the point across in a very good way.
Yes. And way back when, I do not remember the episode number, but we did a comparison between Author and Measure of a Man, because Measure of a Man did this in true fine form. I mean, it was powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, Riker turned Data off, took his arm off, and it's like, look, it's a machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And did that whole thing. I feel like here they're doing the same thing. It's a very well-rounded argument, though. They are acknowledging the flaws, but they're also acknowledging that he's become more than just a program.
Right.
So that's incredibly important. Dare I say it's paramount.
Nice.
Yeah, I did that.
This
is also a great speech. Because if you remember season one Janeway, when Kes goes to Janeway to talk about the doctor and how badly he's being treated by the crew, that's a very different Janeway than the one we're seeing right here. Because season one Janeway, she's like, you're talking about compassion for the doctor. Him? Really? I've heard that he's a complete a-hole. He has no bedside manner. We're talking about reprogramming him. And then here, she's absolutely defending him.
This was a... I really enjoyed the outcome of this episode, where it wasn't, I hereby declare the doctor a person. Yeah! You know, I'm glad that didn't happen. Because what he said was, he's like, I'm not comfortable with establishing this much precedent. So I'm going to give you artistic rights, but I'm not going to give you personhood.
Right. One step at a time, I suppose, which we see in our world all the time.
Right.
One baby step, one absolutely just painful, kicking and screaming baby step at a time sometimes.
This was a... anytime we could find out more about Seven's family, that intrigued me. I really enjoyed that because, I mean, even though we got lots of backstory of her, I mean, we got more backstory of her than pretty much anybody on the ship.
Yeah, but basically.
It was cool to see... It humanizes her a little bit more, where she didn't just have parents who got assimilated. She had people who cared about her, looked after her, and it was, people who were invested in her future and who would be so happy that she's actually alive.
Yes. You stole the words right out of my mouth when you said humanized, because this is a completely new dimension of humanizing Seven. I mean, they've really done this in a lot of other areas, but the fact that she even has an Aunt Irene and is talking with her right now, and this lady, I think she cares a great deal for Seven and is thrilled to know that she's alive. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And take a drink. In the novel verse, there's more Aunt Irene. There's a lot more.
Yes, a lot more Aunt Irene. And I love that, Irene is just kind of like, is like, not poking fun at her, but like teasing her and talking about how precocious she was as a child. And mm-hmm. Seven is taking it how Seven would take it. She's like, oh, I shouldn't have called. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be such a bother. You know, like she's taking that personally and taking it out of context, where mm-hmm. anybody who was raised in humanity would know that that's what grandparents do. That's what aunt and uncles do. They're just like, oh my gosh, you were running around naked one time and I tried to put pants on you. And you know, yeah. And you get embarrassed, but you're just like, oh, Aunt Irene. But Seven was legitimately bothered by what she was saying.
Right, because she's not been human that long still, does not realize the social context of that sort of thing, where it's a happy, nostalgic experience. It's a memory for Aunt Irene.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah, Seven. She'll get there. Aunt Irene's probably got a couple of those naked in the bathtub pictures that all parents seem to take for some reason of their kids. I mean, Seven's got a lot more room to go.
It's so funny.
So, yeah, we have the outcome of the trial, and we've already said what happens, so that's that. I love that Janeway's kind of confronting him, like, you should be jumping up for joy or something like that. But I love what he says. It's a hollow victory. It's sort of like a half victory.
Hollow victory. Get it?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. Ha ha. Oh! Ha ha. But he's right. It's not a complete thing.
If the military did this, where they said they're like, oh, we're retracting all copies of this book that this medic wrote, you know, conspiracy theorists would be like, what's in the book? We got to get a hold of this book.
Oh my gosh. Yes, abso-friggin-lutely. It would be a complete disaster. Can you imagine? Like, think about Roswell. On one of the newest Star Talk episodes, it's a podcast I absolutely adore, Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson. They talk about the truth of Roswell and how all the conspiracy theorists turn that into a thing that it's really not. And it's fascinating. So after you're done here, go and listen to that, because if you don't know the truth about Roswell, you really ought to know.
Yeah, this got me super excited. I know I've said this like 16 times, but this got me excited that we actually got to see the Mark Ones at work.
Absolutely. En masse, no less. Now, I wonder how many hours it took Robert Picardo to shoot all these different Mark One EMHs, because that had to have been a little tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can tell that some of them are stand-ins, but it's
a little bit.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. All right, well, that's the episode.
That's it. That is Author. And it is our last commentary of To the Journey. Now, that's not to say there won't be other commentaries with the new crew that comes in, but it's the last one for us. Author is not the only thing we're talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
What would have been awesome is if he had gone down, he found Bahala, he went in there, and there was an ancient Bajoran piano there. And somehow, it came to him in a vision. He remembered all of the most popular Bajoran songs from the time. And he started playing those on the piano and singing. It would have been awesome.
Saturday Morning Trek.
What I had to assure the fans when I talked at the convention or conventions was this is not going to be a kiddie show. This is not going to be a baby show. We are doing Star Trek. And we were able to do Star Trek in some ways a better way, because we could have wonderful spaceships, we could have wonderful aliens, wonderful planets, and we still had good stories.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
Every chance they have to get him off the bridge of that ship and have him running around on some planet or shooting some guy or jumping on something, they do. And it's like, he's got that chair there. It looks really comfortable. Let's have him sit in it for a while and command a starship.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all the shows that we have on the network. And if you are not already aware, and how can you not be aware if you've listened to any other episode of this network, we are a listener-supported network, and therefore we need your help to keep the Trek Talk coming to you. Go to go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. Everything that we get goes into funding this network, keeping it going for the bandwidth and the distribution, all that fun stuff. And on TTJ, we have several associate producers that we want to thank personally, and those people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Belisio, Kane Janeway, and Ju Kim. So thanks, you guys, for supporting TTJ and the network at large.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. So thank you so much for listening, downloading, and subscribing. We love you guys so much for everything that you've done for us over the years. And we thank you. So many of you have written us tweets and emails and texts and Facebook messages wishing us well, saying that you loved what we've done over the past 4 years. We really, really do appreciate it. And I did a collection of all of them on my Twitter profile. I created a quote-unquote Twitter moment with as many well wishes as I could find. And if you go to twitter.com/theinsanerobin, you can find them there. And we hope that you look for Punch It, which we talked about at the top of the show. That's going to be on the Nerd Party Network, located at thenerdparty.com. Please check for that next week. We have a big announcement on thenerdparty.com next week with a lot of new shows. But as always, please, 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 if you follow us, make sure to stay subscribed to Trek.fm and To The Journey, because you and I are so excited to see what happens on To The Journey.
Absolutely. I am genuinely looking forward to the next take of To The Journey. I feel like we got the ball rolling, and then whoever's hands it goes into, they're going to take very good care of it, and we're going to get a completely different, perhaps, perspective on Voyager. And that's going to be exciting. You're going to get to get some new voices. It's going to be fantastic. And yes, I hope you keep listening to The Journey. Hope you join us for our new adventure on the Nerd Party, as well as our final episode next week.
But you'll have to tune in to find out what that is, and hopefully all of you will. But until then, this has been To The Journey.
To the Journey!